Blog Talk Radio.
Spinning this author, lama, make them piece the M-O-N-E-Y. I love my beaches, soft beaches, surfboard and high tide. I could just roll up, cause I'm swole up. So that birthday cake is the Cobra. Bugatti for real, I'm Cobra. The autobiography rover. Got the key to my city, it's over. No stop, only in the color Cobra. I said records, wretched, hold up.
I said records, wretched, hold up.
I know you can't meditate. If you a freak, then you come on with me. And I know what you came here to do.
What's going down, Harrell? How we doing out there? It's definitely a Monday, man. It was a long one for me today, but how you guys doing out there? Do you have a good weekend? You may do any driving? I don't think there was any racing going except for Supernats. We got a big night tonight on Supernats. I'm not even sure who we have coming on. I mean, all our producer said was Vegas, and we'll have reports from racers and spectators. So who knows, man? Who knows? But hang out with us, man, because I know we're going to have some good ones on here. I know we are. So hang out for a few. Listen to a couple tunes. I think 8:30 we'll get going with some callers. So hang out. Be cool. This is Harrell. This is Hump Day with Harrell exclusively on Blog Talk Radio.
It's going down for real.
Real quick, I'm going to do three AC/DC songs in a row. A little tribute to Malcolm Young, who passed away the other day. One of the most rocking bands ever in history, man, AC/DC. This one's for you, Malcolm. Tribute to the late, great Malcolm Young. Rest in peace, brother.
When I stop and think about all the good times that we had in our life, takes me to a better place. Free space inside my mind, everything that you gave me, I needed just to survive. You were right there next to me, right where I'd expect you to be. Never took it for granted, your simple smile and a wink. Cause I really needed you, yes I really needed you. Grab a hug and a kiss, so I feel just like this. Yeah.
Don't believe me, just why? Don't for action. Nip it in the bud, we never relaxing. Outcast is everlasting, not clashing, not at all. But see, my went to do a little acting. Now that's for anyone asking. Give me one and pass them. Drip, drip, drop, there goes an orgasm. Now you coming out the side of your face, we tapping right into your memory bank. Thanks. So click the ticket, let's see your seatbelt fastened. Trunk rattling, like 2 minutes in the back seat wrestling. Speaker box vibrates the tag, make it sound like aluminum cans in a bag. But I know y'all wanted that 808, can you feel that BASS bass? But I know y'all wanted that 808, can you feel that BASS bass? The girls all paused with glee, turning left, turning right, thought they looking at me. Well, I was looking at them, there on the dance floor. Now they got me in the middle, feeling like a man. Especially the big girl, big girls need love too, no discrimination in this world. So keep your hands off my cheeks, let me study how you ride to beat, you big freak. Skinny, slim women got the so within them, you can them, lift them, bend them, give them something to remember. Hell out timber when you fall through the chop shop. Take a deep breath and exhale, your ex-male friend, boyfriend was boring as hell. Well, let me listen to the story you tell, and we can make moves like a person in jail. On the low.
Get up.
Bye.
bitch, but she ain't bad either. So, hit me up when you pass through. I give you something big enough to tell your ass to. Swag on them even when you drag casual. I mean, it's almost unbearable. In a 100 year, not there would I. Pull up on that bitch, you pay me back. Sounding like your leg guy, he too square for you. He don't smack that ass and pull your hair like that. So I'm jail watch, hand waving for you to salute and chew this pimp. Not many women can refute this pimp. And I'm a nice guy, but don't get it.
KPX Karting Championship is coming to a track near you. This organization is focused on growing the sport of karting at the grassroots level on up. All aspects of the series are based and focused around the racer. Come out and support local racing at a track near you. For more information, go to www.kpxracing.com. That's www.kpxracing.com. Nevada Kart Sport. 1220 East Greg Street, number 17, Sparks, Nevada, 89431. Rodney Rivera has been involved in karting for over 20 years. Rodney does driver coaching and tuning, and has won over 15 championships tuning and coaching drivers over the years. Rodney is also a dealer for Burrell, Tony Kart, CRG, and Ital Kart. So for all your karting needs, call Rodney at Nevada Kart Sports. 775-219-4184. That's 775-219-4184.
What up, How we doing out there? This is Harrell. This is Hump Day with Harrell. We've got our phones lighting up here. We've got some people calling in. And we do have our producer with us tonight, Andy Fecko. How you doing, Andy?
Doing well. We're checking in from vacation here.
Right. How'd it go up there? Fun, good times?
Good. Matt and I have been hitting it, Kitty and I, and Matt have been hitting the workouts pretty hard, doing some running, hitting the weights pretty hard, so we got a little time to do that, so we got to do that hard when we're up here.
Nice. How long are you guys going to be up there for?
We'll be back Sunday after Thanksgiving here.
Gotcha. All right.
Ethan Show's on, Troy Van Berry's on, they're just waiting to come on and give us the report from SuperNat. They're all good.
Let's bring them on, man. We have somebody that raced, and we have somebody that went and spectated. Troy, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing great, Harrell and Andrew. How are you guys doing?
Oh, man, so good. Glad to hear your voice. You've got the coolest name, dude, Van Berry. Who gets that? You know what
right
I mean?
On, yeah.
I want a van in my name, like a Van Fisher or something, you know? That'd be sick.
Well, yeah, and it helps that I'm an artist and I paint helmets, so it kind of works out. So.
I know. It's funny. I didn't know you were going to come on the show, and then Andy was telling me, and he's like, yeah, he paints helmets. He's going to paint Matthew's helmet. I'm like, oh, cool. He's going to paint my helmet, too.
You betcha. I'll paint everyone's helmets. No problem.
That's right. It comes at a price, but he's awesome. I don't know if you guys have seen some of the helmets he's thrown out there, but it ain't no joke, man. He's amazing. So
right on, well,
hit him up.
I appreciate it.
Right. And then we've got Ethan back with us. He was kind of our reporter down there. Ethan, how you doing, buddy?
Good, you?
I'm doing so good, man. Good to hear your voice too, bud. How'd everything go down there, man? Did you have a good time?
Yeah, I had a good time. I just can't thank Oliver Calvo for coaching. I did pretty good, so I started like 31st, and I moved my way up on the start to like 20th, then I got down to 15th, and then I finished 17th. So,
yeah, I was watching you.
Yeah.
You struggled a little bit in the beginning, huh? You had, like, some tough times in the beginning.
Yeah, we screwed up our two heats, and then we got one good one, but we screwed up two of them, so.
All right, well, what happened? What do you mean? Tell us about it. What happened?
So our two heats, we finished like bad to somebody to peace, somebody practice. So kind of sucked.
Yeah, but you know what? You hung in there, bud, and you moved your way back up and you clawed up and you did pretty dang good, man. I was proud of you.
Yep. Thank you.
Good job. Troy, now from a spectator's point of view, man, I mean, you were down there, you were hanging with Rodney from Nevada Kart Sport and Jess Peterson, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I got to go down and hang out with the guys in the Phil Giebler pits and meet Phil and his dad, Everett, and got to see Rodney, turning those wrenches for Jess, and got to see the whole process of and the pressure that those guys are under at these big races. It's really incredible.
Right. What a difference, huh? From even from the KPX to the Nats like that, huh? What a big difference.
Oh yeah, you can tell the intensity is really tuned up, and everybody under their chant was really working hard. And you know, Rodney was telling me, you know, he's doing all these things because he just had to find a tenth of a second is all he needed. And it's just like at that level, when you realize that those are the best racers in the world and you're looking for a tenth of a second and you're running up front with those guys, you just realize that pressure and the amount of effort and money that they've spent to be there is just incredible. And, you know, everybody wants to win, and it really ratchets the pressure up and the intensity for everybody. So.
Right. What's the biggest differences you see from, like, let's say, club level to them super Nats, you know? What's the biggest, you know, obvious differences?
The size of the toy haulers, I guess. Well, yeah, in the super Nats and the national races, obviously you see all the big teams. So you've got the big, you know, 18-wheelers with the big long trailers, and you've got the long tents, and all the factory teams are there. And all the best drivers in the world, the international and American drivers, are all there competing. You got guys from Australia and Brazil, South America, all over Europe. So it's no joke. These guys really want to win, and they put, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into the effort to get there and to try to win. So.
Right. Let alone what they put in during the season, just in training and testing. I mean, we're talking, you know, throughout the year, I don't know how much they spend during the season, but it's got to be a pretty penny, you know, them big wigs, you know?
No doubt about that. Not only do they spend all that money to try to get there, but all that money spent is really just to try to get a good starting position on Super Sunday. And then when it comes down to Super Sunday, you know, it's a lot of it comes down to luck once again. So it's pretty fascinating to watch the whole process. So,
tell us what happened in Jess's race. I know he had some unfortunate stuff happen. And, I mean, he was running it towards the front all weekend. I mean, I really thought he was going to get it for sure a top three, but then he dropped back a little bit. And before he could start making moves, they red flagged the race, huh?
Well, yeah. So, what happened was there were so many Masters drivers this year, they'd opened the field up, so they had 66 drivers. So that split the field into A, B, C, and D groups. So then as Jess went through his heat races during the week, he was finishing second and third in most of them. So by the time the points were calculated for the main, that put him in the fourth starting position, which when I heard that, I was a little worried about that because I knew that that outside group was going to get pushed wide, and that's exactly what happened. It was so aggressive coming into turn one that he simply got pushed wide along with a lot of the outside row. That inside row just sort of freight trained him. And so he came out of the first group there, out of the first couple of turns in eighth place. He had lost four positions. So he made up a position. He clawed his way up in seventh and was actually doing really well. He wasn't that far off the lead group. He was running with a couple of other guys, and they were catching back up. Then on about lap, I believe it was around lap nine, or 10, one of the carts coming through one of the corners, I think it was around turn four, got a little wide, and rim apparently cut into the water barriers there, and water immediately started leaking out all over the track. They immediately brought out a full course yellow, ran that for two laps. The workers there, you know, they were doing their best to frantically try to get the track dry out and get the situation under control, but it was leaking a ton of water, and it looked like they weren't going to be able to get it in time. So after two laps of a full course yellow, they just pulled the red and the checkered through it at the same time, and boy, I can tell you, some people were kind of happy about that, like the team that had the guy in the lead, but everyone else wasn't too happy at all because they didn't get a chance to race for it. So,
Right. That's really unfortunate, man. That's a drag. I think we lost Nesimeno. Did we lose Nesimeno?
Yeah, they're going to try to find him and call him back in. He's calling in. AWOL right now. Totally AWOL.
I might have Eric on here. This is Eric Nascimento. How you doing, buddy?
Good, you?
I'm doing good, man. Good to hear from you. So you were a spectator from home, right? You were just kind of keeping track. I mean, you had things to do here, but little brother was out there. What did you think of the whole thing, man? Was it a decent race for him, you think?
Yeah, it was all right. Last year, kind of the same thing. Just couldn't stay out of trouble, so it kind of screws you up because you wreck one heat, and all those other kids move up, so you're screwed because they combine all the heat. So you mess up one heat, you're screwed for the main. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Where did he start in the main? He started 20th in the main. Is that where he started?
He started 31st.
31st. And got up to
17th,
right?
On the first lap, he was up 22nd in hard charge on the first lap. I don't know how he did it, but all of a sudden I saw him. I didn't see him in 30th no more, so I thought he wrecked. But he got up to 20th on the first lap, so I was pretty stoked on that. But just he did good on the first lap, but then didn't do too good. I think they made a bad adjustment, but still finished. Got up to 15th was the hardest he got, but then just tire pressure killed him, so he just started falling back to the 17th.
Right. So that's not too bad, though. I mean, there was 44 drivers?
Yeah, 44.
Yeah, so that's not too bad, man. That's 44 of some of the best drivers in the world. We're talking in the world, like Troy said, you know, from all over. And that's just amazing. There was a lot of a lot of Americans out there that were ripping, you know, there really was. They did pretty good.
Yeah.
But, Troy, just being there as a spectator, what do you think of the track layout and stuff? Were you able to see a lot of the race? I mean, as a spectator, you could walk around and see all the corners and pretty much be in the mix the whole time?
They did spend a lot more money on putting grandstands up this year. Unfortunately, they placed them all in basically in a line down at the start-finish line, you know, between turns 9 and turns 1. So unless you wanted to walk outside of the facility, which you could do and go out on the sidewalks and catch some other perspectives, and some people chose to do that, and really sitting in the stands, the viewing was a little limited, but you could see a lot of the action. The track layout was incredible. Of course, they were in that newly paved parking lot, so it looked pretty smooth. The drivers said it had a lot of grip, and it really gripped up over the weekend as the rubber got laid down. So, yeah, the action was absolutely fast and furious, even down to the junior kids. There was a lot of bumping and banging, a lot of carts on top of each other. I saw several flips. So, yeah, it was no joke. They were out there racing with everything they had.
Right. So you'd recommend going down there, huh? Check it out. Is it a good experience?
Without a doubt. If you're a carter, this is it's kind of interesting because the race often corresponds with one of the industry trade shows for my day job that I do. So I actually got to go down there on my company's dime, and you know, I didn't get to see as much racing as I wanted to because I was busy during the day, but I did get out in the mornings, in the afternoons, and evenings, and yeah, I saw a lot of action. The prices to get in were real reasonable, about $20 a day to get in to see all the action, and that also allows you to go. The other thing that's great about it is it allows you the full access to the pits. So you can walk and see all the big teams that are there. You can talk to all the see all the people that you know. There's a lot of shops who sell merchandising and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's more than just the racing experience. You can get a whole fan experience of seeing the ins and outs of the teams, the drivers, all the work that they're doing, and as well as, you know, watch the race. So.
Right. So next year, if you need to bring a buddy on your company's dime, give me a call.
Right?
Yeah, I'm down. I'll do some work. I'm down. I like that.
Yeah,
no,
yeah, it's pretty lucky for me. It just happened to work out that way. So, you know, I'll take it.
Right. So, Eric, back to you. I know we talked to you before about it and stuff, but how was it having little brother out there and you at home and him out there racing, man? How was that for you?
I know it was hard for me. My first race, not being there for him, but he was in good hands with my dad and Scott Conway. They both have a lot of experience with karting, and Oliver Calvo helped him a lot. Glenn from PKS, Jesus, he was in great hands with all the professionals out there. A lot of professionals under the tent over there, so I knew he was in good hands, but it was hard not being there with him, but if you want to go race, you got to go to school first.
You're kind of more of the, kind of a driving coach, helping with that, keeping him calm, keeping his head in the game, right?
Yeah, usually a driver coach, and if Scotty can't make it, then I'll work on the car. I know how to tear down the whole car and put it all together, so I can do it all. Just let Scotty do some of the karting stuff because he knows more about the kart than I know about it, and I know more about the driving than he does. So,
right. That's what it takes, right? You got to have a team like that, because if you go down solo and think you're just going to do it all by yourself, you're gonna be struggling, right?
There's some teams in Vegas that got five people on one kart, so it's just out there in Vegas, it's just a big money deal. Whoever's got the most money and the best driver.
Right, that's usually how it goes. The most money and the best driver, that's who's going to win.
Yeah.
Right?
And a lot of luck.
And a lot of luck, huh? I mean, with that many drivers, I mean, there was like 90 drivers in some classes, huh?
Yeah, there was a lot of drivers there.
In the main events, though, it was cut down to, you know, the top, I think, around 35 to 40 drivers, though. They didn't run any of the main events with the full field, so.
Right. I think you're only allowed 44 people out on the track at one time, I think, is what that cutoff was. So a lot of those guys spend all year, you know, prepping for this thing, and they're working on Nats and getting ready for Nats, and they go, and they don't even get to make the main event. They're not even racing on Sunday, right? Saturday, they pack up and then go home.
Oh, yeah, you see some of the professional guys, once they have a hard time and they drop back, they end up like in the tag juniors and the tag seniors, they both had LCQs. So you see those guys fighting, trying to fight their way back up. But, yeah, some of the national number plate holders did not make it into the mains, and they had to rely upon their provisionals. So, yeah, it was a pretty interesting weekend there as far as some of those guys battling and then trying to get back in. So.
Right, right. I saw one of our local racers, Kaylee Maris. She got in the last chance qualifier. Right?
Yeah, I think so. And those guys were wanting to get in real bad. So it was the top six in those two things. So, yeah, those were some of the best races of the weekend as far as the action. So.
Right, because that's
Did you get to see the S1 final with Gary Carlton and those boys? Did you get to see that?
Unfortunately, I did not. I had to head to the airport. That was the final race of the day. So it is on the e-karting news or the website for SCUSA, the Super Nationals website. You actually can go there and see the live streaming because they recorded it. And, that was a great win by the American Billy Musgrave. And European, and then Gary Carlton was right up there, another American too. So, yeah, that was one of the big highlights for the Americans at the SCUSAs this weekend. The Musgraves had been really working hard for that for a long time, and Billy had won him before in S2, but he really wanted to step up and, win the biggest class with the Americans, that we run over here with the Honda package that SCUSA runs. So, yeah, those guys were it was just amazing. You can go and watch that, and you can just see how happy he was after the race to win that one. It was pretty exciting to see. So,
right.
Is he a Southern California guy? Is Billy a Southern California guy? Is that right?
Yeah, him and his dad, Musgrave Racing, they actually came from the motocross world. That's why his dad's the motor builder, and actually Willie Musgrave and builds his motors for him. And, they came out of the motocross world, and so his dad was a motorcycle engine builder. And they got out of motocross, and Billy wanted to race, and now they both race. His dad builds all the motors, and, they also manufacture different radiators and different parts for the shifters and stuff. MRC Racing, those guys have quite the program going on.
Right, right. What happened to Gary? Well, I know he was running up front with the guys, and all of a sudden he just wasn't up there anymore.
Yeah, well, he did do, I think he ran third or fourth in the S1. And, Willie just kind of walked away from it. Billy. Just kind of walked, he led wire to wire, and he was really unchallenged, so he had the setup, and he obviously was there, so I think Gary finished fourth and on the podium S1, but I believe he did have some problems in KZ, and he fell back to maybe eighth or ninth on the week, so.
Gotcha. I thought that he had something happen, because all of a sudden he wasn't, up in the front and starting anymore.
I'm not 100% certain about that because I didn't get to see all of those heats and races. But, I know he was up there battling, and Greg Bell was there and was with him all weekend. They were on the Formula K package, and, he was right there. But that tough competition in the international field and those Italian drivers, you've got those guys, all those factory guys. They were pretty hard to beat. Anthony Abbas and Iglesias and DeCanto and, those guys were tough.
Right, I bet. I can't even imagine. I really can't. What was the highlight for you when you were down there? What was your highlight?
I tell you, For me, one of the things was definitely meeting Phil Giebler and his dad, Everett, and seeing what goes on, you know, the nuts and bolts under their tent, and see how the big teams do it. And also, one of the great things we had this under Phil's tent is Terry Fullerton was there with his Fullerton USA chassis. And he brought over a kid from who races cars, who's a hot shoe from England, who ended up second in tag senior. And so it was quite a thrill to get. I mean, anybody who knows karting knows who Terry Fullerton is. He's the guy that Ayrton Senna's best karter he's ever seen. So getting to see that legendary Terry Fullerton and his guys at work under the tent, and just watching the intensity of those guys work, that was just really a big thrill for me, a behind-the-scenes kind of thing. So I just love that.
Nice, nice. Very nice, very nice. Shoot, man, I'm pretty jealous. I'm jealous of the whole thing for sure. I wanted to get down there, but just had too much work going on, and I just couldn't make it this year. But next year, Andy and I are going to try to make it down. That's what we're going to do.
I didn't get to go the last couple of years. One thing they did announce, Scusa, is apparently the facility they're at is not available next year, so they already announced that they're heading back to the Rio for 2018, and I guess they're going to be back over there. So,
be back to what?
They're going to be there for two more years.
Yeah, they're going to be back at the Rio again. So, Yeah, the Rio Hotel is where they've been racing for the last several years, and then the last 2 years they went down to the convention center, so apparently they're heading back to the Rio next year. It was one of Tom's big announcements this weekend. So,
Is that a good thing?
I tell you, they had when they went from the Rio to the over to the convention center, the small, you know, the bigger parking lot, they actually increased their space. They had more rooms for the pits, and they were able to build a slightly bigger track, I guess. This year, they had even doubled their space because they had torn down that Riviera Hotel and paved that whole area, so that really gave them a lot of room. And but I guess when they go back to the Rio, I don't know, maybe they're getting some more paving done over there, some repaving, but I know they don't have as much room over there, so I guess we'll see how that goes.
Right. But hey, Eric, what's up for you next season? Are you going to try to get back in the kart a little bit, or are you going to stick with the kart?
I want to race a couple races in the tag senior for pro kart, and if that goes well, then we might look at some supernats in the next couple years, but our main focus is the cars for now, but that's one of my goals, is I want to race Supernats in X30 senior class before I get 20 at least.
Right. Well, why don't you tell everyone real quick a little bit about yourself, man? I mean, this is Eric Nascimento. He's Ethan's big brother. Nascimento's been involved in racing and karting for years and years. Why don't you tell him a little bit about, you know, your background and stuff?
Well, I started karting when I was 6 years old. My dad surprised me for Christmas with a kart. And just ever since then, I've always loved karting, the passion of karting. It's just been my number one priority since I was very little. And started moving up in the ranks of racing from kid karts to the WKA when that was big, and the IKF. And when we turned about 11, we wanted to go find some more competition because all the other series were getting low on karts, so we saw that Scusa started a big NorCal thing, so we started doing that. Did pretty well on that, so then when I had to move up, because being overweight, we were just not competitive, so we had to move up and go to the full-size kart. And it was a little scary my first time out, but once you got that extra power off the corner, you just fell in love with it. So raced that for a couple of years. Then we moved into Legend Cars for 1 year, raced a couple races on Circle Track, the stock in the Madera. And my dad has a couple of late models at our shop in Modesto, so we tried out one. I tried out one 2014 at the end of the season, the last race, just tested it, and we were pretty quick. Fifth on the charts out of 25 of the best in West California, and we didn't decide to race, but the 2015 season we started to race and did pretty well. So we did another season, did even better than we did it this year, and the best I've ever done. Got a couple wins and a couple podiums, so really happy, and hopefully we can continue to do better.
Was it a big learning curve coming from the cars to the cars?
Yeah, it was definitely a big jump because you got a big car compared to a little go-kart, so really got to be good on your feedback to the crew and the crew chiefs so they can work on the car. It's not just a little go-kart where it slides in the back or it's got too much grip in the front or the motor's bogging. It's a big car. It's a full-size NASCAR late model, so you really got to focus on how it's turning in the middle, how it's turning in the center, just everything.
Right. A lot more involved is what you're saying.
Yep, it's more of a driver than a crew, you know what I'm saying? Because you got to be able to tell your crew what's wrong with the car, because if you don't tell them what's wrong with the car, then they're just playing guessing games, and it's not good.
Right. You said you were in,
go ahead. What's that?
I was going to say, yeah, it takes a lot longer to get a 2,000-pound race car stop than it does a 200-pound go-kart.
Almost definitely.
Right?
Yeah,
right.
When you're dealing with all weight and the suspension, that's what I've heard, that the adjustment is, it's quite a bit to learn how not to overdrive the cars. Is that right, Eric?
Yep, that's exactly right. You can't overdrive it, and you can't get the car mad in the center, so you got to just wait till it's nice and comfortable and just give it the gas and hope they don't get a little loose and hit the wall. So it's just a lot different. It's a lot more fun than karting, but karting's still fun with all the friends that I made. But I'm glad that I still get to see him a lot because my brother, so still fun.
Right. Well, good deal. So you're kind of on both ends. You go and help your brother out pitting, and you're driving. So that's kind of cool,
yeah.
Man. You get the best of both worlds, you know?
Well, and that's one of the great things about Supernats is you down there is I couldn't believe how many people I ran into from Reno, you know, the Nelsons, of course, working down there with Rodney Rivera and, you know, Jess Peterson and his dad and some of the other guys from our club were down there just to spectate. So, yeah, when you go to the Supernats, you run into all kinds of people that you haven't seen for a while. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's a big social experience and a chance for you to catch up with people. So that's one of the great things about that experience.
Right. Well, right on. Well, man, thanks, you guys, for giving us a little bit of your time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your helmets, too? Let's hear about that. What do you paint just about anything, or what's the deal?
Well, thanks for asking about that, Harrell. It's kind of an interesting. I'm an artist. I have a background in fine arts. My degree, you know, I have degrees, university degrees in fine arts. So, I got a background doing that. And so when I got my son into, when I started racing, got back into karting a few years ago, back in 2007, I bought a kart and started racing and saw all the custom helmets, I just decided I'd had to do my own. So I did one for myself. And then I did a couple other guys wanted me to do theirs, so I did a couple other for the club guys. I did a helmet for Garrett Dixon, Matt Dixon's son, and I did one for one of the other racers in our club. they, it just kind of goes from there. And then I did one for my son last year who started racing. Once he started racing, I had to get him in a custom helmet. And so this year, now I'm the last one that I'm doing right now is for Rodney Rivera's kid, Zach Rivera. And so we're painting him up a really nice design for next year. And so basically I just started painting them and people liked what I did and started asking me if I could do a helmet for them. And I know you've asked me and Andrew, and yeah, I'm kind of gearing up. I use a really super high quality paints, you know, automotive paints. And I try to do a real professional job just like the other guys do at the big shops. So even though I'm kind of just getting started and I can't do a lot of things like chrome or, you know, some of those finishes yet or some of the really fancy stenciling and stuff, I, you know, intend on being able to do all that stuff in the future. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun and it's an interesting process. And I'm just sort of enjoying getting started on all of it. And it's a lot of work to paint these helmets. So a lot of hours of taping. Each helmet takes, you know, a minimum of 30 or 40 hours to paint. So that's why they're not cheap. But, you know, this helmet paint, enjoy what we do. That was one of the cool things at the Supernats, too. One of the things I was doing down there was looking at helmets because, you know, you got 500 racers down there. You know, and at least 400, 450 of them all have an expensive, you know, $1,000, $2,000 custom paint job on their helmet. And so, yeah, you get to see some amazing work, and a lot of people do custom helmets just for the Las Vegas race. And one of the Italian companies was down there, Lucky Designs, and I got to talk to those guys about their process and how they paint helmets. They have 7 people on staff painting helmets at all times, and, yeah, it's a pretty interesting process. So,
hey, 7 people on staff.
How do you start out? You know, I mean, when I called you, you know, we talked earlier this week just via text message, you know, like you're just a guy just thinking, hey, I need a custom helmet. I want one for my kid. So how does the time process start? How do you, as an artist, kind of take in and translate it?
Let's talk about like the helmet I'm working on right now, Zach Rivera. And in this case, he had an idea of some colors and some shapes that he wanted on the helmet. He's not really an artist himself, but I had him do sort of a basic sketch of what he wanted since he already had some ideas in mind. And in that case, I literally took his drawing and turned it into what it is. So generally we start with colors, the idea of everybody, you know, has a color scheme in mind, or they may want some blues or greens or some reds and yellows and oranges. And so basically I say, well, let's, you know, pick out colors that you're interested in. And then if they don't really have any ideas about what they want their helmet to look like, I typically have them find a couple of other examples of helmets that they like, the style that they like. And then from there, I can just basically, you know, as an artist, I have my own vision for how I like to see things. So I just start the drawing process on a computer. I do everything on a Photoshop type of program where I'm actually drawing right on a tablet, and I just design them from there, and then we translate that into the paint. So, hello.
No, sorry. I was going to say that. I didn't know you went through that digital step in there, Troy. That's so you can share the proof of concept with customers.
Exactly. That's the whole idea, is that you don't want to lay any paint down until unless the customer is going to give you full rein to just do whatever you want. And sometimes that happens. People don't really have ideas, and they just want you to come up with something on your own. But typically you're going to want the helmet process approved because people are spending, you know, hundreds of dollars on these things, so if not thousands. So we want to make sure that you're happy with the design before we actually start laying down the paint, and that we that's all approved. So being able to do it in the digital realm as opposed to just drawing it out on paper, that kind of thing, it allows me to quickly go in, alter colors, alter shapes, change the lines, and to basically use that tool as a way to dial in the process and get it closer to what my vision is and what the customer's vision is before we ever start taping and laying down paint. So it is a very helpful and a very important step in the process. And I think pretty much all the helmet painters use a similar process. So.
Got it. And so then when you get your final design done, and now it's time, you bring the helmet in, you take it all apart, I assume. You get all the stuff off of it, maybe even the padding, and then what? Do you give it a little bit of I guess you take the dings out, right? Every helmet's got a few dings here. And what do? You rough up the surface a little bit for paint, or that process? How do you start off?
Right. Well, hopefully the helmet is new. Helmet painters are not fond of painting used helmets, although we will do it, and especially me because I'm just starting out. But there are some of the big helmet companies, Brett King Design or TJ Coyne with Octane Visuals. Those guys won't even paint used helmets. You got to start with a brand new lid because they don't want to mess with anything else. But I'm willing to work with helmets that are still in pretty good shape because, yeah, you are going to have to sand them down. You got to sand the sand and rough up the clear coat finish. But, you know, a good white helmet or a good black helmet or even a carbon fiber helmet, as long as you got a good base and you don't have a lot of dings in it, it's not too beat up, then it's not too difficult to basically do that at initial sanding. You may have to do a little bit of respraying the whites, those kinds of things. But once that process is done and you got a good white, clean canvas to start from, then it's just a question of laying the design down on it. So
right, lots of taping, right? Lots of
I'm sorry,
lots of taping, right?
Right, exactly. That's the funny thing about the process is, I had to learn that myself right away, is that you have to have a lot of patience painting these helmets, because the majority of the process, if I spend 30 or 40 hours painting a helmet, really the actual time of spraying the paint is going to be less than an hour of that. All of those other hours are putting on tape and taking off tape, putting on stencils, taking off stencils, and then fixing your edges and cleaning up any little that you have problems with or oversprays, those kinds of things. So, yeah, it's hours and hours and hours of taping and masking and a little bit of time spraying that paint. It's kind of an interesting process. Most people don't realize that, and I didn't really realize it going into it either, but I found out really quickly that, you spend a lot of hours just with a roll of tape in your hand, so...
Do you mix your own colors too, or do you stick with like factory sort of colors? And I assume you're using an airbrush, right?
Yeah, it's all airbrushed. Even the straight lines, most of us, all of us airbrush all the straight lines. Almost nobody does work, especially on a helmet, because it's such a small round surface. It's very difficult to do the traditional pinstriping types of techniques. So, yeah, we all pretty much do it, I think, the same way, and mask it off and use the airbrushing equipment. So the paints I use are all House of Color, and you can get those in all kinds of different metallics and pearls and different colors of coats and candies and those kinds of things, and they come in all different price ranges. So, yeah, it's just a question of what the color the customer wants. If a blue off the shelf will work, great. If not, we'll mix it up And the same thing with our blends. If we need to blend from a blue to a green, then yeah, you're going to have some unique areas there, and that's what makes the helmets look original and unique, is that you have the opportunity on each one to do something just a little bit different with the lines and the colors. So
seen some of it. It looks really, really cool. So then I guess after you get everything laid down, all the colors are laid down, the edges are cleaned up, and what, you clear coat, right? Time for clear coat? Is that what's the last step?
Yes, exactly. So then, then the second to final step would be the clear coating, and that's typically a polyurethane type of finish, automotive finish. So, you got to mix up two or three parts of stuff to, get the hardener and all that stuff in there. And that's how you get those really super hard, very durable, glassy finishes. And we're spraying several coats of clear on top of it. And then once that's done, then we do a final really fine sanding and a polishing process. So we get that super shiny finish on them and that real clean professional look. And then it's just a question of reassembling, whether we're putting edging back on it, putting the foam back in the inside, taking, any masking off that's remaining, and then remounting the shields. And also, a lot of helmets these days, of course, have the spoilers on the front and the back and the vents. So there may be a process where we got to replace those vents, and or you've also painted those. So all those things have to be reattached, and then it's pretty much done and ready to go back to the customer. So,
wow. So start to finish, Troy, you get a helmet in the mail. And you're working, obviously, like you said, like the rest of us, we've all got day jobs. We wish we could be full-time go-kart dudes, right? So start to finish, you said 30, maybe even 40 hours in a helmet. What's the turnaround to the customer? Because you're probably working weekends and nights and all that stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I do. I would do my day job or my evening job when I have to. I work on the rest of the stuff when I'm at home, because I do have a studio at home I can work out of, so it that makes it nice. And so basically, yeah, I'll sit and watch TV and tape the helmets while I'm watching TV. So yeah, I try to get them done as fast as I can, but it is a process, because just the amount of putting the tape on and then spraying and taking it off, you can't do all of that in one day. You've got to let things, cure and those kinds of things before you can start taping over the top. Obviously, all the paint has to be cured before you can lay any tape over the top, because you don't want to be peeling up your previous layers, because then you've got a lot of rework to do. And so, yeah, it's a real painstaking and careful process. In general, it takes me anywhere from about 2 to 4 weeks, honestly, right now, to get a helmet done. And a lot of it, of course, depends on the complexity of the design. Simpler designs, obviously, I can knock them out quicker. And the more that you want as far as the complexity of the colors, the amount of lines and shapes, those kinds of things, and your name or any of those kinds of things, that takes extra time, and obviously costs more money too, because it's more detail. So
right, but that's all cool stuff. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever actually heard that story from start to finish, so I appreciate you telling us through, walking us through it, because that's all really cool stuff. I mean, I know that I'm no artist, right? I'm not what I do, and so I really appreciate that process and what you guys go through to get a final design, because I've seen your work, I've seen all those other folks' work, and it's just amazing to me that it's like helmet painting is just an art form in itself. The whole, like, creative process, working with the customer, the design process, and then actual execution. So, man, I really appreciate your walk through start to finish, how that all goes. Really cool stuff.
Well, very cool. Well, you're very welcome. I enjoy talking about the process, and I hope people are willing to lay down a few bucks and get those custom helmet paints, because, it really does look cool when those guys are out there with those helmets and their custom suits and all their custom graphics and stuff. I mean, I'm an artist. I do. I've done a lot of, like, for instance, the NMKC logo on their Northern website. I designed all that. That was a great logo from IKF National Win with Mike Botello Jr. that we used for that particular logo. That was great. And then the KPX T-shirts that everybody bought in Reno last year, I was the one who designed that and the flyers. So, yeah, for me, the whole creative process, yeah, getting my work out there, getting people to see it, and feedback, it's just great. I really enjoy that. Obviously, I have a passion for karting and a passion for art. So for me to be able to combine those two things together is just really fun, and I really enjoy it, and I enjoy the feedback I get from people. So thank you. I appreciate that.
Right on, right on. So is my helmet out of the question for this weekend, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got a big show on actually Thanksgiving Day. You know, I get to work because that's what us production guys do. And then I've got Jay Leno on Saturday. So, yeah, I think it's probably going to be next week. Harrell, sorry about that.
All right. But I'm looking forward to it. I don't even know what I want. I think I'm looking at a maybe like a picture of me looking out the back of my helmet. So I'm watching everybody racing.
We can do some stuff like that. You know, that's a cool thing. Right now I'm actually working on a piece for Krista. I have a cousin who came up with a dirt tracking in Oklahoma who used to coach Christopher Bell and who is good friends with him. And of course, Chris Bell is a NASCAR guy who races trucks and Infiniti, and he's moving up the ladder in Kyle Busch Motorsports. And yeah, I'm actually working on a portrait of Chris Bell right now. He won the Chili Bowl. And so not only do I do the paintings, but I also, or the helmets, but I also paint pictures of karting. I did one of my son. I just did one of Phil Giebler a couple years ago, and I just took that actually down and delivered that to Phil. And Phil and his dad were just blown away. You know, a very photorealistic sort of painting of Phil racing in his FA kart. And so, yeah, I just really enjoy the whole creative process, and it all sort of ties together for me. So.
Right. Well, hey, man, I want to thank you both for giving us time. We lost Ethan there somehow. He never got back on board, but so I don't know where
he
went.
Yeah, he had homework and got to get to sleep. Got a big test tomorrow at school.
Right. Well, thanks, Ethan, man. Make sure you tell him thanks, brother. And it was good to hear from you and to get reports from him down there, too. That was awesome. I really enjoyed it. And I'd love to have you on the show some more, like, you know, when you get going in the cars and stuff. I'd love to get some reports going from you and talk a little more about that when we get more time to it. All right. And Troy, man, thanks for all your insight too, being a spectator, being the artiste that you are, and just going down to check out the helmets. I mean, I just can't even imagine. It was just probably like I don't know, it was probably just amazing for you, you know.
Like a kid in a candy store, I got a real passion for this car. I really love it. I've been doing it since I was a kid. My son is racing KPX, in a local club here in Reno. So, yeah, we love it, and we really enjoy it. Thank you as well for having me on, Mr. Ralph.
Yeah. No worries, Tom. Look forward to hanging out with you guys again this next race season, man. See if we can get some, get up there a little more. Your boy ended up doing pretty good at the end of the season, so I was proud of him, too. But thanks to all the listeners out there too. We're cutting it a little bit short tonight. We got some things going on in the studio, but man, I just want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks for all your patience. I know we've had some kind of a few funky shows the last few, but man, we're back and we're gonna hit it hard this year. We're gonna try to do some maybe some winter stuff in Florida. We're gonna try to get in more involved with that. So. Stay tuned for some good stuff around Hump Day with Harrell. All our guests tonight, listeners, Andy, thank you so much for just everything you do, man. You keep the wheels together on this place. So thank you.
Yeah. No problem.
And we'll see you, I guess we'll talk to you maybe Wednesday, and we'll see you this weekend maybe when you start heading back towards here.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to try to get Oliver Calvo in on Wednesday with his dad, Benjamin. I'll be just good.
Nice. You heard it from the man himself. Oliver Calvo is going to be on, hopefully, and we can get some more insight on the racing this weekend. But Thanks, everybody, for hanging out. This is Harrell. This is Hump Day with Harrell, and you're listening to us exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you guys Wednesday.
Brotherhood comes first, and the line will never be crossed. Established it on our own when that line had to be drawn, and that line is what we reach. So remember me when I'm gone. How can we not talk about family when family's all that we got? Everything I went through, you were standing there by my side, and now you're gonna be with me for the last ride.
Let the light guide your way. Yeah. Every road you take will always lead you home. Oh, it's been a long day without you, my friend, and I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began.